had left things off yesterday was... I'm sure they'll come in, but, you know, it's important to, that we start exactly at 7:45. So the where we had left off yesterday was with the first pasuk. Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela, v'halokim nisa es Avraham. So it's after these things, and Hashem nisa, we don't know exactly what that means. Yeah, so that what Nathan is saying, Dr. Gribitz, is let's say the primary interpretation. We say a nisayon is a test.
But didn't we also have flags in the desert that were...
very good. So that's the secondary interpretation. Right, very good. So that is... that's the interpretation of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. The question that I want to pursue a little bit today is, do we have to perceive them as mutually exclusive? I'm not sure that we should. So Vayomer Lav Avraham. So Avram's response was Vayomer Hineni. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos comments that we shouldn't think that this was the only test of Avram's life. On the contrary, Asara Nisyonos Nisnasa Avram Avinu Alav Hashalom. Avram was subjected to 10 crucibles. Very important. And Nisayon isn't just a passing challenge, but really a very intense test. V'amad b'chulam, and Avram passed all of them. Lehodia, this is a very interesting formulation. Lehodia, which is a way of expressing or making us aware, knowledge, yedia, kama chibaso shel Avram avinu. Avram's intimacy, chiba is love or intimacy, kama chibaso shel Avram avinu. That Avram has a special place, kaviyachol, in Hashem's heart because of his capacity to withstand and to succeed in the face of very profound nisayon. Okay, so the Akedah was the climax of these Asara Nisyonos, but it wasn't the only one, far from it, but it's what I like to call nisayon chayav. It was the test of his life. It was something that was qualitatively different, as we'll see now based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Okay, so Jacob, why don't you take the Gemara in Sanhedrin for us? We already had pointed this out last week, that there are two strange things about the pasuk that we just read.
Okay, v'halayim nisa es Avraham v'yemer kach ma es bina.
Okay, so what was the textual point that we had raised was, what does na mean? Kach na. Normally na is something you would say, you know, please, but again, if Hashem is giving a tzivoy, it seems a little out of place, number one. And number two is the whole concept of nisayon is strange. Why? What's the thematic problem with nisayon? Because Hashem, who's...
knows the outcome.
Right, bochein klayos valev, Hashem's omniscience.
Maybe Hashem wants Abraham to know his own capabilities rather than because Hashem already knows them.
Well, that's a very creative answer. So actually, the Gemara will end up suggesting something along those lines. But everybody, Nathan structurally is coming up, I think, with the correct answer. In other words...
I heard it from Rabbi Friend about 20 years ago.
Okay. So I think it's right. It's
have a good memory also. It's a creative and a good memory.
Yeah, so it's very good because...
His example was that Hashem is the ultimate Olympic coach. Your Olympic pole vault coach always tells you 2 inches higher, 2 inches too high, until you fail, and you will always fail. Hashem only gives you the bar to where he knows you can surmount it, and that way he already knew in advance how far you could do, but at least you got to know how far you could do, and he never gives you the one you can't do.
Right, so I think there's something very compelling about that kind of an approach, because what allows us to preserve is Hashem's omniscience. Almost everybody maintains that view. There's only one, it's sort of, this view happens not to be mainstream, even though in general he's very much a mainstream thinker, which... Rishon denies that. There's only one Rishon that challenges that view and says, no, when it comes to these kinds of things, because Hashem wanted to give us free choice, he actually doesn't have that kind of knowledge. Sorry, Ariel, go ahead. I didn't hear you. The Ralbag, Rabbeinu Levi ben Gershom, actually doesn't, Gersonides doesn't subscribe to this level of divine omniscience, but everybody else does, which raises the problem. Okay, so this is what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. It's a very important Gemara, both for the question that it tries to answer and also the proposal that it makes. So indeed, na is like a request instead of a command. What's the point?
Mashal Melch Basav Adam Sh'amdu Alav Muhammad's Harbe. Well, here, look, Gibra Achad, the Netzach.
Okay, so there was a king who was subjected to many threats, many wars, and he had this chief general who was always victorious.
In other words, this was something, this was the ultimate challenge, and he wanted him stand up in war again, so people shouldn't say that the Rishonos, that the earlier wars were not true or challenging enough. Afrikadosh Baruch Hu Omar Lavra Nisisicha Bekama Nisyonis V'Matata V'Kuah Akshap Amodli B'Nisayin Zeh Shelo Yomru Ein Mamish B'Rishonim. So I guess, he's just giving him the ultimate challenge.
Right, and he's saying, this is sort of slightly distinct from what Nathan was suggesting, but the same basic orientation. In other words, it's not for Hashem to know, but for who to know? Right, sort of the world. There's like a Pirsume Nisa component here. This is a way of saying that, the world who holds Avram in a certain category now, right, is prepared to say, okay, because those tests weren't really that difficult. But now, something really challenging, like Akedas Yitzchak, that Avram was not able to withstand, and therefore, Rishonos Ein Bahem Mamish. And the first tests really weren't very significant. Now, this is kind of a strange Gemara at first, because let's say, anybody know, how many tests does an actuary take to get to the highest level of actuarial science? 10. Okay, so they're actually 10. It works out perfectly. So if an actuary passes 9 of them and doesn't pass 10, you don't say that he's at level 0, you say that he's at level 9. So what does the Gemara mean when it says that if Avram had failed this one, the danger was Rishonos Ein Bahen Mamish, that there was no significance to the first ones? In other words, what I'm really asking is, what's the difference between the actuarial process and what Hashem is concerned about here? Yeah, Ariel, go ahead.
Starting from 0.
Yeah, so
in one case, each level builds on the previous one, and in this case, any one of which served to undermine all the ones below it.
Right, okay, that's right. That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. Can anybody build on what Nathan's saying? Why is that true? Why does religious testing work that way? Why is it different than somebody's, let's say you're taking karate, right? So you get to the 9th level, not the 10th level. You say the 9th.
It's faith and not objective. So once you lose faith, All of it falls away. Objectively, you jump 1 foot, you jump 2 foot, you jump 3 foot, you accomplish those objectively.
Okay, I think there's a lot to that. Yeah, Ariel, you wanted to say something? Okay. I think you were saying something before, but...
Very similar.
Okay, so you meant the same thing as him. Okay, so there's an inherent problem, so to speak. This is something we need to be aware of when it comes to religious performance. What's the basic critique that anybody can have of somebody who achieves a certain religious level? It's to say, it's true that they do those things, but they really do it for themselves because it's consistent with their personality or their likings in ways A, B, and C. But if you would actually give them something that they don't want to do, they would be exactly where I am. Meaning, let me just give you the most common example. Let's say somebody studies Talmud a lot. So if you were comparing somebody who had studied 2,000 pages of Talmud and somebody who had studied 5, right? So, the normal comparison would be, okay, this person knows many more pages of Talmud. He knows 1,995 pages of Talmud more. Hopefully he remembers them. And therefore, in his Torah knowledge, he surpassed the level of the one who learns 5 by many, many multiples. But the one who's learned 5 says, rightly, he loves to study Talmud. This just means he knows more Talmud. It doesn't make him a greater religious person because the 5 pages of Talmud that I studied, for me, it's like undergoing a liver transplant, right? It's awful, and yet I push myself because I feel it's the right thing to do. So, right, quantitatively, there may be no basis for a comparison. But if you would tell this person who loves studying Talmud that his religious goal or his religious challenge is going to be he has to, learn to play the violin, he's not going to pass that. He hates music. He's not interested in music. And I sit on the first chair in the Philharmonic. So, he's just lucky that the rules happen to be in his favor. He's lucky. The rules are in his favor. The rules work out for him. So this is always important to keep in mind. It's always a latent critique of a person who's religiously successful. So that's why Hashem's to Avram, if you don't do this one, right, they'll say that the first nine, it wasn't that you didn't pass the first nine, but that somehow, right, it was consistent with who you are. It wasn't really a challenge to you. This one where I really, right, made it very difficult for you because now you had to choose between your son and your moral code because I'm asking you to do something which violates everything that you believe in. That's actually a much more difficult challenge, and that will reveal that the first ones that you did because somehow it was consistent with who you are. Rishonos ein bahen mamish. Okay, but anyway, the basic point here, just one second, Nathan, the basic point here is, again, that it wasn't for Hashem to know, but it was for either Avram to know, that was Nathan's suggestion, or that it was to project Avram's standing across the world. So we'll just go one source further, and then I think Nathan has a question. So this is the Tanchuma on the same point. Jacob, go ahead. You can always challenge a friend, right? Because you don't necessarily know.
You don't know what's in this.
Right. You who know the inside of man. Question? Good.
You should have done this to me.
Right, you should really be able to project the future. So Kadosh Baruch Hu's response is, Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, again,
in other words, it wasn't for naught that I chose you. Shemar ki ati yodati yirei.
Okay, so what's the slight, it is again a very nuanced point, but Dov, what's the slight distinction between the Gemara and Sanhedrin and the Tanchuma? Slight difference in terms of, they're both saying that it was necessary to project Avram's standing to the world, but what's its slight difference? Just give Dov a chance then, Sharon. What's that? Okay, so Sharon?
I think what you're talking about is just like praying forward, so it's like multi-directional, so the difference is between Bnei Israel paying forward so that they can go back and say, remember all of the things that we merit going forward, and this is to everybody else.
Okay, so I anybody want to just sharpen that a little bit? I think I know what Sharon is saying, but again, Ariel, the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying you have to project to the nations of the world because otherwise your standing, Avram, will be under question. The Tanchuma is saying,
Hashem's standing.
Good, very good. Dov, that's what you're going to say? Yeah, go ahead.
Which is also reflective of who is initiating the conversation or the question.
Very good. Very good. Excellent. That's the second difference, and they work together exactly right. In other words, that now, Ariel, just take us home. So the Tanchuma is saying is that because what's one of the long-term values of the Akedah? We were talking about this all day yesterday, that the Akedah justifies the creation of the world. The Akedah, right, impacts the rest of Yitzchak's life. But now, what's the other aspect that Tanchuma is developing about the long-term impact of the Akedah?
Sort of eternal credential.
Right. For Avram, it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying it's the ultimate credential. It's what actually establishes his standing. I mean, the Tanchuma is saying is that it legitimates Hashem's eternal choice of the Jewish people because nobody else, right, can claim, right, this kind of a heritage. Okay, yeah, Nathan, you had a question.
In both of these approaches, I'm a little bit surprised because other than Hashem and Abraham and Isaac, nobody else is there.
Yeah.
So how is anybody's standing going to be lowered when it's all done in private? I know the other two were over there on the other mountain, but they couldn't see and they didn't know what was going on. They had no way of knowing beforehand or even afterwards. And Abraham and Isaac wouldn't have come back and said, oh, by the way, I was supposed to sacrifice my son. I didn't do it and I'm a great guy. He would have never revealed it.
Correct. So let's make Nathan's question worse and then we'll hopefully come back at the end, possibly next week, but maybe even we'll get there at the end today. What very famous medrash is also a problem from Nathan's point of view? It's exactly the same question. We've discussed it already. Sharon's been on top of this. What's that? Regarding the Al-Qaeda, but just it's the same fundamental problem that Nathan just raised. Sharon mentioned this last week. Ariel? who do we think is the ultimate victim of the Akedah in the end?
Sarah.
Right. So how did she know?
That some angel came to her.
Ah, so it actually says
he almost didn't sacrifice.
So it wasn't the angel, but there's a question about maybe a human messenger. There are different versions of this. But again, there's this general assumption that we find within Chazal that word got out. Word got out somehow, whether it was to Sarah or to Umos HaOlam, is that there was something, you know, about this that was both highly private, Vayilchu Shnehem Yachdav, and the Na'arim didn't go any further, and yet, right, there was somehow the message of the Akedah was broadcast both well outside of Yerushalayim to Kiryat Arba, where Sarah was, and somebody again had to tell her, so there are different midrashim about how she found out, and exactly like this Gemara is saying, is that this projects things forward. Now, one way, of course, of answering not the Sarah Imenu question, which is why I think that's even the harder question, but just Nathan's version of the question is the simple approach is to say, of course, in answering Nathan's question,
that
but
it's published in the
Torah, right? The Torah is the method of broadcasting, but that doesn't help you with contemporaneous issues. Okay, all right, good. So Ariel, you want to take the fifth source, Velukim Nisas Avram, the Bereishis Rabbah. This is something that before you came, Nathan actually anticipated both of these sources.
Velukim Nisas Avram, Yossi Agrili on there.
Gidlo. Kines.
Azeshel Shel Svina. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Nisar Tobe Vadai Sheloi, Yu Omrin.
Hamamo Irbivo.
It's
a hard word. Okay, so you have what seems to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva as far as the word Nisa. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, what does it mean? What's a Nes Shel Svina Dov?
A mast of a sail.
Right, very good.
Yeah.
So that he exalted Avram the way that you have on a ship, right? And Rabbi Akiva is saying that Nisa also implies that he was tested, but we saw this a little bit yesterday, but that you should never think that Avram was under any false impressions. There are no pretenses about this, and that he did a bivados, and that again indicates that Avram was committed. Now, is there any way of reconciling these two views, saying that there doesn't have to be a machlokas, and that really both are true, and maybe even more precisely, one is true because of the other?
Why are we assuming it is a machlokas?
Well, the way that it's set up is Rabbi Yossi Aglili says nes here means like a flag or a mast, and Rabbi Akiva says it actually means a test. So there is a dispute about what the primary meaning is, but they can be synergistic. Yeah, Nathan, how do they work together?
This is the hardest test in the history of man. Why should it not be publicized like a flag on a ship?
Precisely. You said it better than I would have. In other words, if you look at the Gemaras and the Midrashim that we said before, right, that's exactly the point, right? That because Avram was able to even succeed at this highest level of test, right, it created a Nes L'Amim. Where does that expression come from? Nes L'Amim? It's not a random, it's like Rabbi Yossi Aglili didn't come up with this idea, but there's actually, the Perek in Yeshayahu, which discusses, what's that? Which discusses, right, the religious standing of the Mashiach, mm-hmm. right? It says that he's Nes L'Amim, right? That his vision is, a kind of a mast or a flag for the whole world, right? So in that sense, continuing the work that was started of Avram Avinu. Yeah, Dov, go ahead.
Literally, what does Rabbi Yossi Aglili say? What was the flag?
The fact that Avram could withstand such a command. That Valukim Nisas Avraham, this was all part of Hashem's plan to exalt Avram.
Okay.
Kines Hazet Shel Svina. To make him great in the eyes of the world.
So is this pshat on the pasuk?
Exalt. Kines Shel Svina.
This is meant to be pshat on the pasuk, just saying
that? Yeah, this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili's.
Nes doesn't mean test, it means
exalt. Right. He exalted him.
And if you were thinking about Rabbi Shimshon Rifkel Hirsch, you would say Nes and Nasi to make him the prince of the Jews?
Oh, that could be. I didn't even know that he said that.
No, I'm asking.
Oh, no, I don't.
He would have said it.
I don't know.
But that's a different spelling. Right?
Even so, but he exchanged.
Right, Rabbi Shimshon Rifkel Hirsch does take those kinds of liberties about sins and samach, so I don't know. It could very well. I don't want to speak for him, but it could be that there's an etymological point of origin, which is common to both. Okay, so Dov, you want to take for us this is a pasuk in Tehillim, this is, and then the two midrashei Tanchuma that work off this premise. Again, this is the last word that we'll have about the concept of Nisayon and how it impacted the Akedah. This is a pasuk in Tehillim, Mizmor Yud Aleph.
Hashem tzadik yivchan v'rasha v'ohev chamas sana lefnafsha.
Okay, so what is the pasuk saying? What is David HaMelech arguing here? Hashem tzadik yivchan. Hashem will... Go ahead, Jacob.
Challenges tzadikim.
Right, and the rasha, by way of contrast, the wicked one, and ohev chamas, the one who, right, propagates and loves...
Anger.
Right, Sana. Evil, right, Sana Nafsho. Hashem just utterly rejects.
So testing is a sign of...
Well said, okay, good. So take a look at the Tanchuma, very good. Very well said, Dov.
Ve'alokim Yisa.
Zehu Sha'amar Akasav.
Zehu Sha'amar Akasav, Hashem Tzadik Yivchan. Amar Rabbi Yonah, HaPashtan Hazeh, Kol Zman Sha'ata, Kotesh Alav, Mishtabachot.
Okay, so what's the mashal? It's a very interesting mashal that Rabbi Yonah gives. He's comparing, right, Hashem's activity at the Akedah to a person who
pounds flax.
Right, very good. So, right, where is he going to pound? If he has a sense that the flax is...
It's going to increase in value or be increase in quality.
Right, only the highest quality flax is he going to be kotesh, right? Because if it's less than very high quality, what's going to happen?
It's going to fall apart.
Right, so that, in other words, what's the perspective? Is that nisayon normally you would think reflects weakness, and we're not sure. So Rabbi Yonah says it's on the contrary. On the contrary, nisayon reflects optimism, right? and basically a sense of confidence. So that's a very, it may be somewhat counterintuitive
well, it's also,
for us.
It's almost, it's a productive activity. Also.
Yeah,
it could. It's like a it's refinement.
That too. But you only do it right. When there's a certain foundation.
When it's worthwhile.
So. Exactly. Yeah, Ariel.
So we've qualified the basic need for Nisayon, but why specifically this Nisayon?
Okay, good. So that's something that we have to, go further and talk about. I really appreciate Ariel's question. Right now, all we've dealt with is the general concept, both in terms of Hashem's omniscience, and does this reflect a weakness in Avram, and was it really for, you know, giving Hashem a certain credibility in terms of his choices, or giving Avram a certain standing? We explored all of those points of view. You raise a very good question. Again, this is, when we talk about the Sifrei, God willing, next week, the Sifrei says this was actually the ultimate test. This was actually more than asking Avram to sacrifice his own life. By the way, why would that be?
Because it ends his total presence in the world, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his whole continuity is erased.
Right, and his whole legacy.
Right.
There's nothing else that, right, his whole idea, right, Avram, we talked about the Av HaChesed, right, this will be a repudiation of everything that he stood for, right?
Well, I mean, he created it, well, what about all those people he brought with him?
By the way, anybody remember that? So Dov is saying, what about the Nefesh Asher Asu V'Charan? Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, but I'm just... No.
Mm-hmm. Ariel? What happened? So Chazal always argued that they just were frittered away. They never... Well, yeah. Remarkably. Yeah, Sharon.
Does it? I mean, don't we see that they really struggled with this, like going back to what Dr. Pippins was saying last week, that this goes against every single moral fiber.
All of these midrashim are responding to that 100%.
It wasn't so simple that this was like flax. I mean, you know,
For sure. That's.
I think that they're trying to create something because it's
and
disturbing.
And remember, I've chosen one out of every 12. Just reading the whole. I mean, you know, I just chose the ones that I thought spoke. Provided complementary points of view, but 100% that the whole enterprise is acknowledging how challenging at so many levels, theologically challenging this section of the Torah is. So apropos that point, I guess Sharon, you want to take the last source in this section, because actually it speaks to your point. Okay, so Dov, do you want to Velukim Nisas Avraham?
Velukim Nisat Avraham, Bovara Ma Ben Rishonim Lachronim, Sharishonim Hayu Biznasim Al Yudei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shenemar Velukim Nisat Avraham, Vekena Tamot Sibidor Hamidbar, Laman Anosechel Anosos Ladas, Aval Achronim Nisusu Al Yudei Umas Olam, Shenemar Ve'ela Goyim Asherini Hashem, Nisos Mames Yisrael.
Okay, so in your own words, what's the Tanchuma saying? Is
he's saying, like, let's compare the early days and the later days. In the early days, people were the Rishonim, or whatever that means exactly.
Right. Let's say in the times of the Chumash. Right.
In times of Chumash, they were tested. You know, God did the testing directly. Lo al yedei shaliach. And later, in later days, it was umos ha'olam. In other words, it was done through an intermediary, through the force.
So, what do you make of that? That one is, how's the Medrash in a certain sense responding to Sharon's point? Is that in the end, you're right, that, but we should take a certain degree of meaning or solace from the fact that,
well, that it's one, that it's God directly, so it's kind of a primary source test, and the instructions all have the same, you know, all have this power to them that's sort of different, right?
Right, that the very fact that Hashem is in dialogue,
right.
Right. Even if, again, the substance of the interaction is very challenging, right, there's still something energizing and truly great about being in direct contact with Hashem, as opposed to, right, dealing with Hashem's absence and just his, you know, indirect orchestration, right? So that's the Chazal are saying, is that let's not forget about that either. V'alukim nisas Avraham, however challenging that is, that also represents a very high spiritual attainment in its own right. Yeah, go ahead, Dov.
Well, it's hard to understand how any principle, and this is an opposition to Dr. Kribitz's and my wife's view.
Right.
It's hard to understand how any principle withstands direct contact with God, because you're just sort of looking and saying, well, what underpins anything? I mean, there's one case where there's an issue of uncertainty, and so you can sort of say, you know, we're responsible for kind of understanding the world in our own way and doing the best we can, because we don't really know what's right and what's wrong. But if you're actually told what's right and wrong from the direct source, what do you really have to say about that? I disagree. You're wrong, God. It's immoral.
Don't raise an important point. And ultimately, that does appear to be the message of the Akedah. However, the very fact that
everyone listens to God in the Bible also, which is a little bit mind blowing.
Right. I mean, look. You know, what did they say right before the war with Amalek? Again, they're having man, and they have the pillar of fire and the cloud, and they say, Hayesh Hashem bekirbeinu imayin. Does God really exist, at least in our midst?
Right.
So the human capacity for doubt, you know, should never be underestimated. That's very important in its own right. Okay, so now we're going to move to the second section today about Hineni, which Sharon has spoken a lot about, especially last week. So I wanted to show Medrash, Rashi's iteration of the Medrash, Tanchuma, and then a head-to-head comparison between Avram and Moshe that the Bereishis Rabba undertakes. Okay, so Jacob, you want to take this section, 9 through 12?
Okay. Vayomer alav Avraham. Vayomer Hineni. Mahu Loshan Hineni.
What does that mean?
Loshan Anava, Loshan Chassidus. Shakain Inbun.
Anva Sanuso, it's a hard word.
Chassidin Bechomor.
Okay, so that Hineni has a dual connotation. It connotes both humility and piety.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the Medrash. That Hineni is not some kind of, you know, you might think that it's some kind of a self-referential, here I am, you know. Put me in, coach. On the contrary, right, it actually connotes humility. Right, and piety, as Dov was saying a second ago, right, a kind of readiness to execute Hashem's clearly expressed will. Now, Rashi does reformulate. Rashi is working off this medrash, but you'll notice a slight difference. Kach yani asam shel chasidim.
Loshon anava hu loshon zimun.
So Rashi adds in this term, Loshon Zimun. Zimun means
readiness.
Readiness. So that for Rashi, there's no contradiction between humility and self-effacing, healthy self-effacing, but also Lashon Zimun, right? By the way, this is a really, I think, really inspiring Rashi, especially because Rashi's the one who's inserting Lashon Zimun. It's not the original Medrash. There's Rashi saying is that there's no contradiction between being a person who's completely motivated religiously and who's, you know, always at the ready, right, with total preparedness. It's very hard in life. The people who are the most anav in general don't necessarily project zimun all the time, you know, readiness for the next challenge. And the people who are always looking to the next challenge and extremely motivated don't always project humility. But Rashi is saying is that they actually can coexist. Lashon anava, lashon zimun. Yeah, Nathan, go ahead.
If you look at the Israeli soldiers, not just now, but throughout the last 60-odd years, it is their humility that makes them ready to volunteer for tasks that might certainly lead to their death. And so I think we have a tradition from
right.
Abraham through today of modesty, self-effacement, and supreme readiness to do it early in the morning.
So, yeah, it was interesting is that I actually had the same, when I think about this Rashi, I always have the same association, Hadar Golden, Zatzal. Anybody remember what he had in his tefillin bag? This is a credo for the yeshiva that he studied in, Yeshivat Bnei David. So he had this on his tefillin bag. He had this on his on one of his sakios neshek. Two words, oz ve'anava. Similar concept. Okay, that it's a very important synthesis, which I agree is part of the moreshet, is part of the legacy of Avram that we're trying to establish is projected forward. Okay, so now we're going to plant a seed for next week. The Tanchuma says, Hineni actually has other latent meanings. So Dr. Gribitz was teaching me a little bit before this year about viruses. And one of the very fascinating things about viruses we know is that they, you know, have the latent phase. Very fascinating concept. So there's a latent connotation towards Hineni Lahavdil, which the Medrash explains. Vayomer Hineni. Hineni.
Hineni l'kahuna. Hineni l'machos. Hineni l'shchot.
So what is this Hineni l'kuhuna? We'll leave aside the Malchus point for now, because we'll understand that a little bit more later. But, Dov, why is this Hineni, why does it have to touch on kuhuna? So we'll set us up for all of next week. Why is that, how did kuhuna enter this discussion?
Was this like Mamlechet Kohanim, the idea of that Avram is,
okay.
Avram is basically a religious leader.
Okay, very good.
For Umos,
so that's one possibility.
He's going to spread the word.
Okay, very good, one possibility. Well said. Jacob, I saw you.
Sacrificial.
Ah, very good. That has to do with the realm of Kadshim. Okay, very, very, very important. Is that now Avram is, and we're going to see this at great length next week, that Avram, right, is playing the role here of Kohen. Right, because if it's going to be an actual Karban Ola with a Mizbeach and the whole deal in the place that will become the Beis HaMikdash, so really only a Kohen has the right. So Hineni L'Kahuna, that Avram has to become, at least, you know, from the standpoint of an honorary degree, an honorary Kohen at this moment. Now here, we reach this really, really important comparison, which is made many times explicitly in the Torah through Sefer Shmos. And now, now we're going to see a version of it in the Medrash on the word Hineni. Okay, so Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe the following. Al tishadar lifnei melech v'makom gedolim al ta'amod. Don't presume to stand in the presence of the king, nor in the presence of the great ones. Okay, Avram Amar Hineni. Okay, Jacob, you want to take him from there? Avram Amar Hineni.
Avram Amar Hineni. Hineni l'kuna, Hineni l'makos. Zachol l'kuna.
Okay. Avram actually became a Kohen. Who remembers where that pasuk is? Ariel, where's that pasuk? Ata Kohen Le'olam, Al Divrasi Malkit Zedek. It's a pasuk in Tehillim where David is explaining how Avram, right, attained the status of being a Kohen. After all, who really was the Kohen at that time? Malki Tzedek was the Kohen in Shalem, right? Yerushalem, right? V'hu Kohen L'Kel Elyon. So somehow Malki Tzedek was surpassed at this moment by Avram. His status of a Kohen was either given or temporarily given. And there are different ways of thinking about that vis-a-vis Malki Tzedek. So Avram became the Kohen, or even the Kohen Gadol at that moment. Not only that, but
Zachar l'Malchus.
Good.
Nasi Elokim Atah B'Sofeinu.
Where is that from?
When he's buying the with Ephron
Achim. And it's Jacob, right? In the immediate aftermath of the Akedah, the very next section of the Torah. Good. Moshe Amar Hineni. Moshe presumed to say the same thing. This is a shocking line.
Al Tikarav Halom.
Krav.
Krav in.
Ein Krav Ela Lekuhuna.
Ein Krav Ela. Ein Krav Ela Lekuhuna. Heich Ve'at Amar Ve'Hazar Karav Yamos. Halom Ein Halom Ela Malchus Amar Al Kodesh Baruch Hu. Al Tikarav Halom. Karev in.
Ein Karev Ela Lekuhuna.
Al Tikarav Halom. Karev Ein Karev Ela Lekuhuna.
Good.
Heich Ve'at Amar.
Good. Karev always implies kuna. So Hashem says to Moshe, first of all, you're right. Don't presume to be in the same league as Avram. Ain karev ela kuna. You think you could at this stage be a al tikrab halom? You cannot. And halom ain halom ela malchus. Echdata mar ki abiosani ad halom. In other words, this original scene Moshe used to build up. But Moshe, you know, saying at the Sneh Hineini, right, is like totally and complete. God says, wait a minute. That word is already taken. By who? What's the point of the Medrash? Is that Hineini always bears the imprimatur of Avram Avinu. From this point on, it's like Nathan was saying, the Moreshet Hineini is something that we all aspire to, right? But that Hineini as a word always connotes, right, standing in the footprints of Avram, trying to walk, and again, you have to be there. So what I wanted just to show quickly at the end of this year is to see, show how the rest of Sefer Bereishis, in many ways, is a competition about who can be the legitimate successor to Avram. In other words, who can rightly say, good, okay, so Ariel, you're going to take this for us. Just take us through the next few sources. You're going to see how the rest of Sefer Bereishis becomes a referendum on who's legitimate successor. Go ahead, Ariel.
Before you start, this word, halom, is that dream?
Halom means literally to, halom is dream, halom means to this place. Al tikrav halom. You cannot encroach upon this place. Halom. So it connotes both kahuna, you cannot encroach upon the kahuna, nor can you attain malchus just yet. Moshe would achieve both, but only in time. Okay. So Ariel, go ahead. Okay, so what happens? Right, Yitzchak is trying to recreate in his own way a very special moment in his life. So right, this is verbatim. If I said Vayomer Elav Bini, Vayomer Elav Hineni, right, you would say, oh, that's a pasuk from the Akedah, because it is, but
trying to transmit his legacy.
Ah, very good. So now Yitzchak is, right, calling Esav Bino HaGadol, but, and what does Esav say? Ah, okay, good. So now, this idea is the idea that Yitzchak had. It's also very much the idea that Esav had, that, right, that the legacy of Avram is going to be channeled down this path. Okay? Okay, so Yitzchak says, right, I don't know when my end is coming, so therefore, Jacob, you're correct, it's time to generate the means of succession. The ata. So where did this language come from? The ata sana, right?
No.
Right. The ata kach na espincha. Right. So right, he's generating a kind of a 2.0, right? It doesn't have the same gravitas as the Akedah, but the wording and the cadence are all based on creating this moment.
What do you mean by
2.0? Oh, just he's saying he's generating a kind of a
second version.
A kind of an interaction based on the Akedah.
Is that a sports term?
But it's more like a technology term.
Like Web 2.0.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, okay.
Either one,
right, exactly. Okay. So then what's the project? Vaseli matamim kasher ahavti. Again, the ahava. Pinchas yechid kasher ahavta es Yitzchak. so that I can again channel the bracha. The bracha is, of course, the bracha of, we know the end of the story, so it goes to a different person, but what becomes the name of the bracha? V'yiten lecha es birchas Avraham, the legacy of Avraham. Okay, very good. Now,
there's really no test here, though.
What's that? Well, there's a generated test. Correct. It's not right. It lacks. That's what I was trying to say. It lacks the gravitas. But he's generating a scenario instead of just giving him the bracha. He's generating a kind of right
of a vessel through which to give it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, it involves some father son interaction. There's something there. Now, we're not learning toldos right now, or else we would talk a lot.
There's a shechita here.
For sure, that's the whole idea. But we would talk a little bit more about why this in particular was appropriate. Yeah.
And you also have Abraham giving his blessing and tradition to his second son, and Yitzhak giving it to his second son.
That which is what ultimately. It's funny, right? That I think it's a joke, right? Everybody turns into their mother, right? Even though, of course, it's the last thing that Yitzhak would have imagined was going to happen, but actually. It got set up just that way. Nobody was more surprised than he was about how the whole thing turned out. Okay, so that was Esav making his case, Vayomer Hineini, but Yaakov, now to be outdone, has the same thing. Okay, so go ahead. This is... Okay, Vayhi. This is Yaakov in the house of Lavan. Okay, the test of the sheep, how Yaakov becomes a wealthy man. That's the next time that Hineni, right? Yaakov, right, has to say Hineni, and then finally in the next generation, it's all about who has the right to,
In this case, it doesn't really happen, right?
What's that?
He's imagining it.
What's that?
It's in a dream.
It's in a dream phase, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so that Yosef, there's a lot of midrashim where Yosef, I'll tell you one of them, but it's the same idea, where Yosef says he wants to be the legacy, he wants to be the heir apparent to the legacy of Avraham and Yitzchak and all this. So, very interesting. So I'll just tell you one medrash which picks up on this point, that Vayomer Lo Hineni, said the Medrash Tanchuma, comments that when Eshes Potiphar approached Yosef, she said, "Will you sin with me?" She didn't say it that way, but that was the implication of her statement. So Yosef said, "Well, I would, but I can't." "So why can't you?" He said, "Because we have a tradition in my house that one child becomes a korbanola, and I always was hoping that it would be me. So if I defile myself at this stage, right, I could never be the korbanola." Like, what? It's all based on this understanding that Hineni, right, that he wants to be, right, the next link in that chain. Yosef has this aspiration to be Avram Yitzchak. Then it gets channeled through Yaakov. Yaakov says Hineni. So again, it's very important.
Yosef waits to find out what the question is before he says Hineni.
What's that?
Yosef waits until he knows what he's being asked to do.
That's true. No, in fairness, I mean, it's right.
Is it like a pun?
Very good. Very good. So anyway, what we're talking about going forward is one of the many legacies of the Akedah is this word, Hineni. So one of the, what I call the scriptural legacies of the Akedah is that every time you see that word, you should always have in mind, right, Hineni. Now, just let's round out this year today with the following observation. Who do Chazal always contrast with Avram? Who is the anti-Avram? Literally, Avram, exactly, but in the negative direction. The evil Avram.
Lot.
Not Lot. Lot is actually impacted by Avram, but he's the... what was this? There was Superman, and what was the other guy? Bizarro?
There was Bizarro Superman.
Right, so who's Bizarro? Who's the guy from Aram who has a donkey, who's got two attendants?
Oh, Bilam.
Bilam, right? Right, exactly. And so, Bilam, anybody remember the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says that they were opposite people? Anybody who has an Ayin Tova and a Ruach Nemucha and an Nefesh Shvela is a Talmud of Aram Avinu, and anybody who has an Ayin Ra and a Ruach Givoha and a Nefesh Rechava is a Talmud of Bilam. They're always being contrasted with each other because they're very...
Did Bilam ever say Hineni?
Ah, so then Bilam says Hineni.
to Hashem.
Into Balak.
To Balak. Okay.
So exactly. So he has the same.
He's channeling it.
Right. So again, it's all part of the Avram construct. It's just a question of, you know, who is the legitimate Hineni and who is, like, you know, the anti Hineni. And this is okay. This is what we spoke about. Okay, so let's just review what we said today. We talked about Velokim Nisayas Avram. So, what is the nature of the Nisayon? There were 10 Nisayonos. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Hashem said to Avram, "Please, if you succeed in this Nisayon, it will instantiate you as my Gibor, and it will validate the other 9 Nisayonos." And then there's a Tanchuma, it's put in slightly different terms, right? That success in this Nisayon for you will, right, establish my justice. Hashem says, because I chose you. And that was all a way of saying that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili don't need to be arguing. Right? Because Rabbi Akiva, who said it's about passing an incredibly difficult test, not to be tricked through a test, but to pass it, ultimately leads to a Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Nitlene Samim, Kinesaza Shel Svina. And then we talked a little bit about the meanings, the many different and important meanings of Hineni. And we said that the Medrash says Hineni connotes Lashon Anava, both humility, but also Lashon Chasidus, piety. Rashi made it ever so slightly different. He said it's Lashon Anava, but also Lashon Zimun, right? A certain sense of preparedness that comes along with being an Anav, as Dov had it, being ready to adhere to the voice of Hashem. And then the next two midrashim that we looked at all further established Avram's credentials, right, as not just an Eved Hashem, but as a Kohen. Okay, setting up what we're going to talk about next week, which is the status of Yitzchak as a Korban Ola, and this is being, you know, a real Korban, and not just a sort of a symbolic Korban, but Ve'alei Usham Le'ola, that's part of what Sharon was talking about last week, as a very important standing, and that even Moshe Rabbeinu, somebody who would go on to be, you know, unsurpassed, at least in his nevuah, could make no pretenses to be able to say Hineni. Hashem says, Al Tikrav Halom, Al Tikrav in a Krav el Kahuna, Halom in a Halom el Malchus, that Moshe Rabbeinu could not, at least ab initio, hold a candle to the standing of Avraham Avinu, and that the rest of Sefer Bereishis, in many ways, is about who can rightly be a successor. Is it going to be Esav, Vayomer Hineni? It'll be Yaakov, Vayomer Hineni? And then in the next generation again, Yosef's desire to be part of that Masora, right? His father calls him, L'chavesh l'chachalehem, Vayomer lo, Hineni. And then, of course, you know, in the absurd, right, Bilam's pretense, Hineni, when he says, Hineni holech le'ami, right, that he also, well, he wishes to pretend that he were, you know, of the significance of Avram. Okay, so next week, God willing, what we're going to do is we're going to look at how the Akedah really bears the stamp of Kachem on it. I'll just set it up with one halacha. The Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tazayin, says, how do we know that when you do Shchitas Kachem, when you do Shchita of a Korban, you have to use a knife? Vayikach Avraham es hamachelas. That this actually became the template for the Shechita of Kachim for all generations going forward, and many other halachos that we're going to derive from the Akedah itself.